Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Welcome back to the Legendary Cycling Podcast for a cracking day of ciclismo. Paris-Nice and Tirreno Adriatico really turned it on today. This episode brought to you by Join Cycling. We've got our Flanders Challenge coming, a Flandrian Challenge next week, so a little bit more on that in a second. But we'll start with Paris-Nice, as we've done this week. Stage 6 from Sisteron, where they finished yesterday, so no transfer for the riders. To La Colle sur Loup on the coast in Nice, or the familiar training roads for a lot of riders. 200Ks, so a decent stage of 4.5 hours with medium mountain throughout the stage, rainy, wet, cold conditions. And the real feature is this final local circuit where they go through the finish line and then up La Colle sur Loup, which is 1.8Ks, 10.3%. It's like a stepped climb with steep pinches in it. It really reminds me of the climb Simon Yates attacked on when he dropped Roglic in the 2022 Paris-Nice. And then there's like an 800-meter, 8% kicker at the end where there's some bonies. False flat, or maybe not false flat, a little bit steeper mm-hmm. than that, but like a pedaling descent into town before a little kicker up to the line, 300, 400 meters uphill. A very interesting stage, Benji. Tomorrow's stage also modified. That came through. We'll get that profile up when we preview it later. But what did you expect from this stage, knowing the GC position, Plaposaurus Rex in front, Santi in second? What did you expect?
Well, I'll be honest, I expected Plap to lose the jersey because I expected the GC riders straight up start attacking when that final climbing section hit. Those like that like combination staircase that you mentioned before that descent to the finish line, that's where I expected a Remco attack, where I expected Roglic, if he had the legs, to try something, where I would hope Skelmoser would follow because I was hoping he would win the stage. But to be honest, I was just expecting a Remco attack on this stage. That's the main thing I was looking for, because it would make sense to do so at this point, because you hinted at the fact that tomorrow's stage changed. It's made a tiny bit easier, so anytime you can get back on today's stage is an addition to that. And we basically start off, first of all, what was your expectation?
I thought Remco was going to, basically what I thought was going to happen was Remco would go clear with three guys, like I said yesterday, on that steep climb. He'd ride to the top full with them in his wheel. They'd realize we can get on the podium on GC here, collaborate. He'd lose the sprint in the stage. He'd move up on GC. Someone else would win the stage, like a Skelmoser, and it'd be happy days for them. And that's what I expected, because it's a really good profile for him. And it's a really good profile for a lot of riders. Like, McNulty's really good on these. Jorgensen was almost the strongest in the final 10Ks behind Poggi on that Nice Air stage in Paris-Nice last year when he was with the group of 360-kilo guys and he was trucking them. So, it's a stage that suits a lot of these riders, even someone like Santi. Someone like Santi is really, really good on this. And I looked at the watch from the other day. Santi, if he did the climb all by himself 1 second slower than the other guys on stage 4, he must have decent shape. So really open stage. Ineos pacing, Benji. That's not what I expected. Quickstep, Trek, not Bora because of what happened, the beatdown on stage 4, but I expected Quickstep or Trek to be the ones pacing. Were you surprised to see Ineos take it up?
Yeah, for the sake of the race, I'm happy that Ineos paced and controlled the breakaway because it gave us GC action at the front of the race towards the end. But I was also questioning, okay, what can be in the head of Ineos here? First of all, they've got Bernal as GC leader here. So we're looking at Bernal as a rider. What is the likelihood that he drops everybody on that 1.8-kilometer climb? Not the case, in my opinion. What is the likelihood that if he doesn't drop, that he wins the sprint afterwards? Not very likely, in my opinion. So I would have expected Ineos to let the work be done by other people, because that would tactically make more sense.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't have probably done that. I actually would have put Tarling or Turner in the Breakers defensive satellites.
Tarling was in the break for a second before it got called back again, I think.
Oh, well, in that case, fair play to them for trying that. Or maybe he's just going for the stage win, because, yeah, that would make sense in case if Egonito gets dropped or someone goes clear, to have someone like that on that descent afterwards, huge difference. We even saw that in Torino earlier in the day. But before we get into the stage when coverage indeed started, or the other coverage started, we'll mention Join Cycling. Two pieces of new information or news of note for yourselves. If you use the Athletes Food Coach app that is now directly integrated with Join Cycling, Food Coach is an adaptive nutrition training platform which adapts your nutrition based on the rides you're doing. So now when Join adapts your training program, it automatically adapts your nutrition program if you use both of those platforms. So that's a really nice integration where you have your both adaptive platforms covered. And secondly, on the 13th of March at 8 p.m. Central European time, CET, there is a seminar with Jim Vandenberg, who is the founder of Join Cycling, talking about frequency, how to improve your ride in 2024. So you can sign up for that. Go to Join Cycling's Instagram for more on that. You can see the link in their bio. And if you miss it live, you can get the recording afterwards by contacting them. So I'll be attending that because we'll be on 13th of March, we'll be in Flanders together. So I'll be tuning in from there. And I actually just finished my training platform. My training plan, except like the taper week I'm in right now, last endurance ride yesterday, big ride tomorrow, 3.5 hours of VO2 max intervals, then I'm done. So I've been very happy with that. So we'll see how I go in the Flandrian Challenge next week, but I think I'm in some of the best shape I've been in for a long time using the Join Cycling platform. So go check it out. 30 days free, no strings attached trial through our code down below. And thanks for Join Cycling for sponsoring this episode. But who did get in the break, Benji, eventually, in Paris-Nice?
Bruno Marmirai from Decathlon Age Desert. We've got Christian Scaroni of Astana, Cedric Bullens of Lotto, Gijs Leemreis of DSM, George Zimmerman of Intermarché, the closest in GC, but still far enough that he wouldn't be taking the jersey anytime soon. Michael Storr of Tudor and Mathieu Burgodeau of Total, together with Mats Pedersen of Little Trek. And that was the initial breakaway, as in that's what gets away with 130 kilometers to go roughly on these like climbing segments in the middle of the stage. And 20K later, or the climb later, I would say, might not have been a full 20K later. We get a bit of a reaction from the peloton, Lawrence Piffy, response from Groupama. So probably in response to Mats Pedersen, I would say, and Marco Haller as well. And the gap is only 25 seconds to the peloton at this point. But that is the breakaway that eventually gets the gap that matters. So a pretty solid breakaway. And it was, like we said, Ineos controlling in the peloton, bringing now the gap down to about 40 seconds. We've spoken about our judgments on Ineos controlling and so forth already, but again, I'm happy that they did for the sake of the race, because otherwise the breakaway might actually win with the strength that was in there today, because that's a solid 10-ish riders if they continued from that point onwards. And that breakaway does eventually get caught, and it all kicks off on the final climb of the race. But the weird thing for me was there was already this kind of like uphill segment, a bit of a false led uphill segment before we get to the final climb, is what it seemed like, because we crossed the finish line before we get onto that climb, Patrick, and Catania was pacing in this intermediate part. Yeah, and then we start hitting the bottom of the climb, and there's zero Quickstep riders inside outside of Remco.
Yeah, it's like the finish line, kind of, they even though the climb actually starts before that, they all decided they'd really kick off after the finish line. I think there might be a turn after it. Do we mention goal being split?
Probably not.
So there was a split Felix goal again off the back on a descent from, and Little Trek paced full gas, and so did Pola for UAE. It ended up being of no real consequence. But I just note that Sam Bennett is in good shape. He was there at the base of the final climb, so his fitness is quite good at this point of the year. But as you said, Benji, Catania pacing, I thought, oh, okay, Catania Van Wilder. We're going to see a Remco launch here. That's what I was expecting. And then off Catania, Jay Vine does like a 600-watt burst, it seems, off the front. And he gets a gap. That's closed down by Van Wilder, but Van Wilder's then just done. And then someone does a huge lead out for Roglic out of nowhere, Benji. I think even Remco wasn't on Van Wilder's wheel. He's a bit deeper. I don't know. I guess it was Sobrero who did the Roglic lead out, but they get an actual gap. Roglic has got a Domestique in front of him. Apologies to Vlasov if it was him. And then
I don't think so.
They're pulling just away with Roglic in the wheel. And I was thinking, this is fair kudos to Bora for trying. Yeah. And I was like, this is going to kick off.
Kudos for one getting Roglic in that position at the foot of this climb into that corner, like you mentioned, where the steepness started. And then they immediately get that gap. But what was shocking to me is the response to that, like you mentioned, like Remco was isolated. From that point onwards, Remco's completely isolated, no quick step riders, and that should not be happening this early in a stage like this. And yes, the weather was harsh, and maybe that had an effect on the quick step team, but I still expect someone to be there with Remco at that point in the race. So he has to start chasing himself on like, what is it, 10, 15 meters roughly behind those two Bora riders. Vine had already kind of dropped from in between, and I think Buitrago was sitting in the wheel of Remco at that point. And it's really Buitrago that closes down the last portion from Remco towards
Roglic. Again.
Yeah, he attacked across, but they followed his wheel, so it's kind of closing. But that was the first hit of Roglic. And
on that point, Dan.
Yeah.
This reminded me a lot of Hazelanas, Vuelta 2022, the Sierra Nevada. Yes. So the Sierra Nevada climb is like the steep part. Jumbo, as they were called then, went full gas into the bottom, launched Roglic, and he just went crazy. And Remco clawed it back and ended up being stronger. It also reminded me of the initial part of Fossombrone, I was pretty sure Remco was coming back no problem here, unlike Fossombrone, where he held the gap. It looked like Roglic on the steepest bit just went full gas, and it wasn't enough. And when that happens there, Benji, he's got no domestiques. We got, 27Ks left?
Yes.
It's a big group of GC guys still. In fact, some teams have got Almeida, Vine, McNulty, 3UA. You've got APP, Gal. You've got Ineos with C-Rod and Bernal. There's multiple teams, multiple leaders. Remco slow closes it. Yeah, and because this climb is irregular, it's ripe for attacks when there's a regroupment. And Roglic was clearly done at that point. I think probably he's flatlined at that point, but Remco, when he closes to Roglic and stops, it's like kicking the can down the road for more problems to happen, because someone's going to go again.
Exactly. The best defense in a situation when you're arguably the favorite in this race, Remco. Like, even with the situation in GC,
everyone looks to him as the favorite.
Everyone sees him as the favorite. So you're there in a group of 10 riders, 10, 11, whatever it is at this point. So the people are going to attack you. They're not just going to pace with you up the climb. So your best defense is attacking the group. And that depends on whether you have the legs. So if Remco has the legs at this point, he should 100% tactically attack, because that will get him the best situation. Because then he will reduce the people that are with him, and in doing so, limiting people that can roll attacks on him. And he doesn't do that in this case. He starts kind of pacing the group until halfway the climb, I would say, where he gets an attack rolled upon him by Matteo Jorgensen. And that's a perfectly timed attack, because it's a moment where Remco's kind of like, I'm not going to pull this entire climb. And he kind of stops. And then Matteo just slides across and attacks in a perfectly timed sense. And That's the first one. First rider off, gap is immediately like 5 to 10 seconds. No immediate response, because Remco's like, I'm not going to close that. But then 10 seconds later, he realizes these other people aren't either. So then he has to start pacing. So by not attacking, he's fucking himself over. It's self-sabotage.
Yeah, I don't believe he's good enough to just go solo when he closes Roglic. Maybe he is, which is great. Then he should attack.
Yeah.
But when he goes, for sure, he gets rid of 5 or 6 guys.
Yeah.
Roglic would have dropped. You would have got rid of maybe Plap initially, and then you get the group to 4 guys, and then maybe you get some. It's easier to manage, easier to cooperate. Maybe one pulls. So, Whereas, yeah, I can understand you're not wanting to pull 12 guys. So that was really the only option at that point, was to go super hard after he closed Roglic. Maybe he couldn't. I don't know. Maybe he was like, he was at his limit. But yeah, the Jorgensen attack, that's sort of okay, because it's not completely Remco's problem still. Jorgensen's behind him on GC. He's behind Almeida and McNulty on GC. It's Schelmoser's stage win going up the road. It's Plapp's problem. It's Santi's problem. He would still have collaborators in that situation.
The problem is, though, that someone like Plapp, he's just happy he's there, alive at the moment. He's happy he's not dropped at the moment. So he was off the back for a little before that moment. So I don't expect Plapp to immediately go to the front halfway to climb, risk getting countered again and fully dropped afterwards. So I would expect Plapp to start helping in the later phase of the race once this climb has passed. Then Bernal was gapped earlier as well on this climb, so I don't expect him to do much. Then when it comes to UAE, they've got multiple riders. If I'm UAE with multiple riders there, I'm not pacing. I'm rolling attacks, you know? Because, yes, Jorgensen is ahead, but if I can roll an attack on this group and get the same situation going behind that, then that's more beneficial than just pacing Remco to the finish line as well. So there's, I feel like in my head, Remco put himself in a situation where he would 99% of the time would always have to chase here. And it just keeps coming, because I first of all want to say, if he does have bad legs at this point, I can't really blame him.
You look at the final sprint, he was the strongest in the group.
Yes, but let's say he hypothetically does, then I can't blame him for his tactics. But if he does have good legs, he should have 100% attacked. And even at this moment with Jorgensen gone, there's moments where he's kind of like, you guys need to start pacing. And then Roglic comes to the front a little bit to help a bit, and then goes out the front again, down to Remco again. Then we get out of attacks, and I think it was Schelmoser together with McNulty that decide to come over. And they hang in the middle a little bit, but eventually crawl towards Jorgensen, and a three-man group forms at the front. But the gap's still 15 seconds, and Remco's still pacing. What are your thoughts at the moment?
The McNulty, Schelmoser, like, when Jorgensen was solo 10 seconds ahead, that's a salvageable problem. He's one rider, he's behind Remco on GC, but then when McNulty goes, 70 kilo sort of guy like Jorgensen, absolute truck, ahead of Remco on GC, ahead of Jorgensen on GC, and then Schelmoser's good too. Now you got three ahead, two of whom are very, very strong. That's a massive problem. And now UAE won't help you in the chase. So that was like the critical moment where you just cannot let those two go, because now he's in this situation where he's chasing all for 20 kilometers, 22 kilometers. Maybe he gets a bit of help from Vlasov here and there. And Santi, unfortunately for him, who knows what could have happened with his GC in this race. He crashes. There was a very, very slippery looking corner and section, a left, right. And he, I think, pedal strikes, crashes coming in, going onto a little uphill. And, I don't know if his bike was cooked. Bilbao was there saying, do you want my bike? Join a pool. And I don't know, Santi then eventually changed his bike. And he looked really good. He looked really, really strong. Yeah. So I don't know what would have happened with his GC. But that's a real shame. But that's another person that won't help Remco chase. And then Jorgensen, just before the before the climb, the 800 meters up to the KOM, oh, not the KOM sprint, the intermediate sprint, he gets bridged to by Schelmoser and McNulty. And they start working. They start rolling through immediately. McNulty's like, I can secure GC podium, going to the GC lead. Schelmoser's favorite from those three to win the stage. Jorgensen can move into second on GC.
Yep.
They get to the sprint, intermediate sprint. Jorgensen takes it. Schelmoser second, I think. McNulty.
Yes. Schelmoser didn't sprint. McNulty looked a bit gapped over the line, actually, which was a bit weird, but he held on, and those three guys just gradually extended their gap in the next 2 kilometers, because behind it was kind of Remco's pacing most of the time in this group. And every now and then we do get a move from someone else in sense of helping, as in Vlasov first attacked the group, which on the climb I would have found it interesting. At this point with McNulty at the front, I'm not sure that's the best move.
Yeah. But that, do they even care about winning this race anymore at that point? No, but Rog is like 12th on GC.
Yeah, fair.
And it made Remco chase anyway.
When Vlasov does get caught again from that Remco group, then Vlasov falls into a domestique role for what felt like 7 seconds before it was down to Remco again. Eventually, the Bora riders start pulling through more, like Vlasov, like Roglic. Both of them do some work in this. I will say that it's probably 75% Remco. I'd say it's about 15% Bora. We're surprised not to see Plap come to the front in the descent to the line, though, because he stayed at the back for most of it.
Not really. I mean, he looked good. He sort of attacked almost at one point on the climb, but not really. I know he's in the leader's jersey. Maybe a little bit on the pedaling pass, but the descents are not his forte in the first place, particularly in the wet. So, yeah, maybe he could have pulled a little bit more. I think Decathlon had APP in there. They had two riders, and he didn't pull for Felix Gall. And, like, Gall could cook tomorrow or on Sunday. So I was surprised they didn't put a Domestique at the front. Bernal pulls occasionally. Then he's like, the problem is, if you go watch the original show on MTV, Ice Road Truckers, when they go through Boise, there's Matteo Jorgensen there driving one of them. Like, they're riding against two, like, 70 to 72 kilo guys, McNulty and Jorgensen, on a 3% downhill, 4% downhill, who are doing like 500 watt pulls. And Skelmoser, who I think is a good descender, was getting gapped half the time on this descent. Like, they were going so quick, McNulty and Jorgensen. They just exploded this gap because they're like, they're one day riders as well. Like, that's the problem for the group behind. So, like, yeah, Roglic and Remco and Vlasov and Bernal not going to make too much of an impression on that. So that was it. It was more, what was the gap going to be? We eventually saw Skelmoser start to play for the stage win, maybe 5Ks out. He was like, okay, I'm not going to win GC in this race. I'm too far behind. These two are stronger than me anyway. Let's just make sure of the stage win. That's why my team rode all day. But, fair enough. McNulty and Jorgensen kept pulling, and Skelmoser lights it up at 250 go. They lose his wheel. He wins the sprint easily. And credit to him, credit to Trek. Pedersen missed out last two sprint stages. Skelmoser gets it done. So good for them. Yep. Especially after the disappointing TT. And you know what? He's up to fourth in GC as well, Skelmoser. So he's ahead of Remco now. So he's got the podium all to play for. Jorgensen tries to react, but then McNulty comes out of his wheel actually after pulling the last 600 meters himself and takes second, which also means he takes the 6 bonies, Jorgensen the 4 bonies, although Jorgensen took a 4 bony delta at the IS, so he's 2 bonies ahead on the stage net. Leading the group behind, Remco leads out the sprint from 500 to go, gaps everybody off his wheel, even takes a second gap at the line on 52 seconds. So they gave 10 seconds back, the leaders with the finessing, and Tejada 5th, very, very nice, this Paranese. APP 6th, Gall 7th, Kelderman 8th, Roglic 9th, Bernal 10th, Plap on the same time in 11th. Almeida was off the back chasing the whole time. I think they even dropped Vine back to pull for him.
Yeah.
And he actually loses. He got close, 10, 15 seconds initially, but then the last kick, he goes out to 27 seconds back. So he loses quite a bit of time on GC, actually. And in fact, you know, when you're looking at Gall's final stage positions, APP, would Gall be in 7th now if APP had pulled? But revised GC, McNulty goes into 1st. America! after 190? Hold on. 198 is after 120 mile stage. He goes into the GC lead. 23 seconds ahead of Jorgensen, the other compatriot. Plap down into 3rd on 34 seconds. Skelmoser moves up 15 spots on 54 seconds in 4th. Remco on 103 in 5th. Bernal on 114 in 6th. Almeida drops 3 spots to 130. Gull 136. Tejada 137. Kelderman 139. Roglic 144. Santi loses 12 spots to 233. He lost 239 on the stage. Big shame for him. It was a really nice last hour, Benji. I enjoyed it a lot.
I think so as well, but wait. Do you hear that? Do you hear that? Ding, 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 ding. The Remco said something segment. It's back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, but it was kind of reasonable.
Yeah, full on respect for what he says after the stage, to be honest. He basically says, I made a tactical mistake. I could react to Jorgensen, but I gambled wrong because I wanted to try something on the last part of the climb. I don't know how to translate this sentence. My my Dutch isn't good enough. But he says, in the future, I shouldn't overthink things as much as I did today. I got to trust my legs and act accordingly. That's basically what he says, which, fair.
It's true. No, legit, sometimes in cycling, we'll see it in Tirreno. I said this as a joke last year, but it's not even a joke sometimes. Like, with Jonas, it's like, stage parkour looks good, fits Jonas, feels good, set him up, little man go fast. Smash. Like, sometimes it really is that simple. And, you know, you just... sometimes it's not, but sometimes it is. And I would say the last today and 2 days ago really suited Remco. Generally speaking, when you look at his 1 day results. Obviously very cold conditions today, but I think he's quite good in the cold as well. So he'll be disappointed. But also you got to say his team didn't do him too many favors either, Benji, being isolated that early on the climb. Like, if there's APP still there, no disrespect to him, but I know he's a nice rider. He was good in Paris last year on these short climbs, but it wasn't a group of two that Remco was chasing from. It was a group of 12, 14.
Yep.
And I think if Mikko Landa was here, this race might have been quite a bit different, actually. Maybe not, but I think Landa would have made a big difference. What do we think now going forward, Benji?
When it comes to Paris, I would say... Damn. When it comes to GC, the gaps are notable, but we've seen McNulty collapse once already this year, so it's not impossible. I'd say tomorrow... Should we look at the stage first before we judge that?
Yeah, let's show people the revised stage.
Okay. So, previously, we had the Oron climb, which was, well, a harder climb. I think it was 7Ks at
7%. It was a harder stage overall. They had two climbs in it.
Yeah. Tomorrow, we have 104 kilometers. It's not even that hard of a stage. There's an uphill segment at the start of, like, 5 kilometers at 5% where a breakaway could form, but after that, it's kind of... I'm probably disrespecting it by saying flat, but it's as close to it as it gets. It's a Uniperto stage in my eyes. And then the final is just a 15-kilometer climb of 5.7%. So not... I don't know if I would... It's relatively Jebel Jais, is how I would say it. There's 1 kilometer. Depending on which profile of the climb I look at, there's 1 kilometer of 9% that could be attack to attack on.
That ain't the one I'm looking at.
Yeah, I'm also looking at a very different one right now. But the Paris-Nice profile that I looked at this morning was 9% in a certain kilometer with about 6K to go. So
I think the finish is steep.
It is,
I think the finish is steep. I mean, it's really hard for me to see anything different but a Jebel Jais-style sprint at the top of this. It really is difficult to see because you'd have to... who's going to set a nuclear pace? UAE don't have to do anything, right?
Yep.
So they just... get on the front with Vine and ride a 5 watts per kilo. That's what I would do. No need for McNulty to take any time or risk it because McNulty on Jebel Jais looked bad. Obviously, he was bad on the feet, but the day after the TT on Jebel Jais, he was no good. I mean, they could get offensive with Almeida and attack, I guess.
Well, I say that ain't happening, my friend.
Yeah, true. Your man's going to anonymously backdoor 8th on GC in this race. Bet everything on that. So then the question is, who's going to take it up? Who's got the team to take it up? Does Quickstep have the team to really make this climb super hard for Remco to attack? I'd say no right now.
They didn't show the team that, spoilers, we might be talking about later, that might, in some universe, have led to a Jumbo rider attacking, a Visma rider attacking in Tirreno. So they don't have that. On this climb, I can't see you making it super hard with the team that Quickstep had today, at least, because they weren't there when it mattered. Now, tomorrow's stage is easier before that climb starts. So maybe that's a difference. Maybe then Cataneo and Van Wilder and Vervaak and so forth are at the bottom of the climb ready to smash it. Because they're going to need it to do something here. They're going to need the tempo to do something. And also the incentive for the other teams. If you're Jorgensen, you're going to defend your position. If you're McNulty, you're going to defend your position. If you're Roglic, they try today in some shape or form. But at this point, I might as well try and just win the stage if I'm Bora.
Yeah,
I'm only looking at Quickstep to explode this climb. And
I'm looking at Decathlon as the only other option. They got APP, Goal has to move up spots.
Very true.
He's got better legs than eighth in this race. He's got to move up spots. He won a top five. So I'm looking at them, or even Santi and Bilbao, or maybe Santi attacks. Vlasov attacks. He's on 242. It could be an open climb. I think it could be chaotic, but someone's got to make it hard. I think, should Jorgensen, you play Kelderman to make McNulty. You got to try again. You got two stages to try and overhaul McNulty. Is he better on tomorrow's long finish or on Sunday?
You have to try them both, eh?
Yeah, so I don't think Visma should just defend the position if you want to win the race. It's a good climb for Plapp. Really good climb for him. Steady 5-6% for someone of his profile. So I really am unsure of what's going to happen, to be honest. I'm going to take another Santi stage win. I think he attacks from a group of 7 GC riders. Mm-hmm. And because he has such a margin, no one is incentivized to chase him. So he's attacking the last 3Ks, 4Ks sticks, and he wins by 10 to 20 seconds, or maybe even 25 seconds.
Honestly, Roglic should win this stage.
But his sprint hasn't looked as good as
exactly. Just in general, he hasn't looked fantastic, this Paranese. Because even today, I felt like there was a moment on the climb itself where he was gapped by the first 6 riders in that group.
Remco and Coco dropped him, yeah.
So I'm looking at this climb and I would say Roglic in Visma would win this stage. But he's not at Visma right now. He's got Vlasov, who's acting as half a co-leader, even though he's falling into a domestique role every now and then. And in addition to that, I don't know, man. Sobrero's been looking okay, but not extraterrestrial either. So Skelmoza versus Remco sprint at the top.
I don't trust Skelmoza after a climb like this with a sprint.
I don't know.
Maybe it's Remco sprint. But yeah, give me.
Remco has to take time back.
Yeah, he's got to at least attack Plapp and get the podium under lock before the final stage.
And
Skelmoza
doesn't need to attack. He just needs to follow.
Yep.
He can use Remco attacking and try and benefit from that because his GC, is he actually relatively close in GC now, Skelmoza? He's like fourth now.
Yeah,
might as well start considering GC, to be honest. He's ahead of Remco.
He's got to beat Plapp for podium.
Yeah, so... Yeah. I'm going to say Remco wins tomorrow. Madon Dutel.
Who's in GC lead?
I'm going to say McNulty, man. Like, this climb, he should be able to hold that. Come on.
Yeah. He looks in better shape than he did in UAE in the road stages. He was very, very strong today. He looked like he was in Valenciana, even though he came into the race with a bit of sickness, as he said. So, yeah, kudos to him. Deserve it into the lead. And there's going to be some American Civil War, I think, this weekend, unfortunately. So, but it'll be exciting to watch. All to play for still on GC. And, that's Paris-Nice. Maybe a lot of learnings for a lot of riders as well. Particularly Quickstep, I think.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Onto Tirreno Adriatico. We had... the first of the real GC stages outside of the TT, stage 5 from Torricella Sicura to Valle Castellana, 144Ks. Unlike Paris-Nice, this is a compact and very difficult stage all the way through, almost no flat. Medium mountains, 5 of them in the first 100Ks before the San Giacomo climb, 12K, 6.2%, I believe, where Gino Maeda won a Giro stage in 21, before a descent of 15 kilometers, 2K kicker of 5%, and then uphill false flat drag to the line in Valle Castellana. So 12K, 6%, nothing too serious. There are 3Ks averaging 7.8% in the sort of second third, but then it levels off 5% the last 2.9Ks. a lot of riders were interviewed in the morning, Benji, saying could be a, it's a breakaway stage.
Mate, Keon said it was a breakaway stage.
Yeah, it's just deception.
Never believe anyone.
Deception.
Never believe anyone.
With a smile on his face too. He's so friendly. And he's,
it's fib, a breakaway.
Fib straight to the interviewer's face.
Oh.
But yeah, anyway. What break formed?
Stage starts. We get a brutal attack from the start from Jasper Philipsen. I don't know why or what the plan was, but he's not in the eventual breakaway. The eventual breakaway is Filippo Ganna of Ineos, Alessandro De Marchi of Jacob Alula, Nicolo Bonifazio of Koratek, Vendrame of Decathlon Age Desert, Clément Davy of Groupama, Simon Clark of Israel, Damien Housen of Q36.5, Asgreen of Solo Quickstep, and Magnus Cort Nielsen of Unowex. So that's a bloody good breakaway. You've got rulers in there, you've got riders that can get over hills in there, and you've got, I was going to say like, and you've got Clément Davy, but he rode well today, so I shouldn't say that. That breakaway was up there, up the road, and it was shocking to me how easily Van Baarle and Kruiswijk were controlling that breakaway.
Yeah, well, Van Baarle, because yeah, there's no Gesink, so normally the role would actually be Gesink, and Van Baarle would control this, and then you save Kruiswijk, and he would do the intermediate sprint climb super hard. Yeah. And maybe even the base of San Giacomo. But yeah, Kruiswijk was on flat pulling duties. And I agree, Benji. I mean, I don't know, I haven't looked at the watts yet, but because that break is like so strong. So strong, that break. When I saw that breakaway, I thought, like, Simon Clark is incredibly good on this parkour. Housen's been good at Q36. Asgreen was not shabby in opening weekend. But I think the way I saw it, there's just not much flat. The only time the breakaway took it from like 1 minute out to 1:40 was a 10-kilometer false flat uphill section before the intermediate sprint, because there's just not enough flat where they can actually really climb much faster than Kruiswijk and Van Baarle. So what we knew though was it's going to be a super hard stage, just attritional hard all day. And yeah, that breakaway is basically done for, Benji.
It's the Visma Liesepijk, Jonas Vingegaard MO, make the stage as hard as possible and then smash it on the climb. And that's exactly what's going to happen, because we see that gap 60 kilometers ago, 1:30, 45 kilometers ago, 45 seconds. Before the climb, Hirschi pacing the peloton into the foot of the San Giacomo climb, maybe to position or just to keep the tempo going into the climb. But that breakaway gets caught. Let me just get that out of the way. Just after the climb starts, basically. And that is under the tempo of Attila Valter, Hungarian champion, setting tempo. And it's a solid tempo because people are dropping, and the sprinters are already dropped at this point when the climb starts. They were dropped in the Van Baarle and Kruiswijk behind the breakaway pace earlier. So Attila Valter, solid tempo. Basically, to me, it seemed like he halved the group, is what that looked like. And I felt like he kept going for about 5 kilometers before we see Valter going off the front, Bentola taking over, and it's that kind of ramping up pace, starting off at the same tempo as Valter, but gradually ramping up with Vingegaard in the wheel and Kian Uytterbroeks in that wheel. So Uytterbroeks was not ahead of Vingegaard, so I was thinking, okay, Uytterbroeks, they'll use him as a free element, they'll let him do his own GC stuff while Tollet is doing stuff for Vingegaard here, is what it seemed like. And when Tollet took over, the group just started fracturing because his tempo kept ramping up. And were you surprised to see Tao Gegenhardt cracking at this point?
No, I mean, he's coming back from an injury, to be honest, and he maybe doesn't have the volume, because this is not like a one and done Uni Puerto stage. This is like a fatiguing stage, like you see in a Grand Tour, the way they've done it. So not surprised. I hope to see him a little bit better. And yeah, as Kirby called him, the Seven Oaks Sabre, Ben Tullett, what a nickname. it's very different to what we saw in Camino. In Camino, in the horrible weather, he wasn't this good, probably below his expected standard. And today, this reminded me of his pull in the, which we remembered, in the Giro Fedaya stage. So he shredded the group for Ineos before Sivakov on the stage Hindley took GC away from Carapaz. Tullet reduced the group to like 8 riders on, and that's at the end of a third week in a really attritional stage. So I was hoping to see it, better weather. And yeah, this was a really, really good performance from him, because if he doesn't do that pull and you're keeping Kian in GC, then you got no one to really launch Jonas, because off Valter's pace, he's not going to get separation. It's a 6% climb. And yeah, that's what happens. Tyler ramps it up, launches him, and then Vingegaard goes. No one can respond. The group, I think Movistar was split. I think Pidcock had already dropped Benji.
Movistar was an odd situation. They just had three riders parallel to each other on the road.
Dropped the wheel in front
of the back. I think so too, that they were just positioning fucked at that point. Then that was before that Vingegaard move really started happening. And when he does that move, that attack, you said it, nobody can follow. And we see splinters in the group behind, as in the first two are basically O'Connor and Hindley. And then behind that, Pidcock's dropping through. Arensman is there. Ayuso is there. Keon is there. Was there another one I'm forgetting?
In that group? Or Hindley was in that group at that time.
Was Hindley not with O'Connor already?
No. O'Connor, okay. And when Vingegaard initially goes, yeah. I was like, Ben, don't do it.
Yeah.
O'Connor tries to match his acceleration the first minute, which is a big risk to do that. And O'Connor's kind of in no man's land for a while. Eventually, Hindley goes across to him. And it's like, it reminded me a fair bit of the Tourmalet stage last year in the Vuelta, where like Vingegaard doesn't just get a 50-second gap, but it just keeps creeping up. And the people behind trying to hold the pace eventually slow down a bit. And yeah, Hindley gets across to O'Connor. They start relaying. Hindley drops O'Connor all this time. Ayuso, he just doesn't even try to react on Vingegaard's initial attack. He's just doing his pace, staring at power meter. And it's probably the best thing, frankly, for him to do. Del Toro comes back to that group and starts pulling. O'Connor goes back to that group. And suddenly, Del Toro pulls Ayuso with Arensman, Otterbrooks, O'Connor across to Hindley. And I don't know what the gap was at the top. It was too big already, to be honest. 30 seconds, I think, the gap was on top of San Giacomo. And I did think, though, Benji, maybe Del Toro's a demon descender. Or did you ever think they could close it and make it at least 20 seconds or, like, keep Ayuso's jersey?
Jonas is a good descender, so no, I did not believe that. And also, if they get to that uphill segment towards the end, it's still Vingegaard versus Del Toro, and every now and then someone else will take over. So I did not see anyone taking over at that point. I was looking at Vingegaard taking time here, and to be honest, it came to the point where once we hit the uphill segment towards the finish line, I was starting to consider, if I'm UAE right now, the gap is 50 seconds. It's now moving towards a minute at this point. Sorry, but what is the likelihood that Ayuso actually keeps up with Vingegaard and Petrano tomorrow? It's not really that high based on what we saw today. So then I would have considered having Isaac Del Toro and Ayuso sit up a bit and start rolling attacks on the other to take time on the others towards the end of the stage. That was what I would have started looking into, to be honest.
Yeah, that's right. Like, if you get dropped on 6% by a guy who's smaller than you, then the maths kind of say, on 8%, it was going to drop you even more.
Yeah.
But it's a different stage tomorrow. Like, who knows what could happen. But yeah, whilst Del Toro was a huge help, and I shudder to think what the gap would have been without Del Toro there, and I was really impressed by him. They weren't making much headway, because it seemed like whilst they might have been pedaling faster on the straight sections, they kind of overcooked a corner by trying to go too quick and make up too much. And then on the 2 kilometer 5% kicker, everyone's just rolling through. And I was actually surprised not to see more playing for podium, actually. Because Arensman's 9 seconds behind Hindley on GC and O'Connor's 3 seconds behind Arensman on GC, I was actually surprised at how well they semi-cooperated all the way to the line and didn't attack each other on that 2 kilometer 5% kicker. But that's not what happened. And yeah, Vingegaard goes solo. He wins 1:12 gap to Ayuso. Hindley led out the sprint, a very strong sprint at the end, and Ayuso just nailed him on the line for the 6 bonies. O'Connor on a 2-second gap to them in fourth on 1:14. Arensman on the same time as well as Otterbrooks, Del Toro, Pidcock. He was in group 3, and they come in at 2:52. So that's a very, very big gap to the top 10, like 2:52 on this sort of stage, with Vauquelin, Grégoire, Kemner, Bjerg, that's a huge ride from Bjerg to be in that group. Enric Mas, Tiberi, Sosa. Sosa got, I think, O'Connor messed up a corner in front of him. He had to avoid it in the descent, and then he was, when O'Connor came back on the descent and brought himself back, he dropped Sosa. So I'm not sure where Sosa would have finished. His descending didn't look that good, though. Tao and Sheffield and Carapaz on more or less 3:27 or so. So you reckon same repeat tomorrow, Benji, on Monte Petrano. It's rinse and repeat time.
Yeah, it's rinse and repeat time. It's making this... Do they even need to make the stage super hard? You might as well at this point, but Vingegaard wins tomorrow. Like, or you consider his lead big enough that you let the breakaway win and then smash it behind it anyway because Vingegaard's won Tirreno anyway.
I would let the break win, to be honest.
I wouldn't. I'd be greedy and take it.
I mean...
Let's be honest. Most of the teams don't like Visma anyway.
Yeah, but come on, there's...
It's so you might as well annoy them even more.
At the break win, we'll put Tullet in the break or Valter in the break and win from the break.
Is that any better?
Yeah, because at least you... Yeah.
You're winning with more riders. You're saying not even my leader, but my domestiques are better than your team.
But there's
it's not better.
Okay, but if Vingegaard, if you pace all day super hard and Vingegaard gets dropped.
But he's not going to get dropped on Petrano, dude. Like, this ain't Paris-Nice 2023.
Yeah, true. And there he, I would let the break win. Just because also it's 180 kilometers and there's a lot of flat there. Like, I mean, it's what Dylan Van Baarle gets paid to do, but without Hesink, I'll let the break win personally.
So reality to me is, if you're going to go for it all out on the San Giacomo stage, you might as well do it on the uphill finish.
Yeah, yeah. Danny Martinez. What happened
about
him?
I have no clue. Didn't see him at all.
Lost 3:20. That is classic Danny Martinez.
That's a shame, actually.
I knew it was going to happen. He'll probably win Pays Vasco or Romandy. Okay, so I'm going to pick someone from the breakaway. That sounds like you've got Vingegaard for tomorrow.
Yes.
Okay. I am going to go with... Who did I like the look of who's a pure climber who could get in the breakaway? I'm going to go with... What's he on GC?
I'm curious. Martinez?
Wild Poles or Caruso.
Fair.
Wild Poles or Caruso. Bahrain, they just win. And those two are good.
Yep.
So I'm going to go with them from the break.
Fair.
And probably we should see some good attacking for the podium on GC because Vingegaard has... I didn't read the full GC. Vingegaard has a 54-second gap on Ayuso and 120 on Hindley. Hindley probably will defend third. Aaronsman, O'Connor, Del Toro, frankly. He's on 134. They will attack Hindley for third, I would say, is what should happen tomorrow. So still looking forward to it. It's a 30-minute pretty steep climb, which I haven't fully said the stage, but it's a 10-kilometer 8% finish, HC climb. It is harder than the climb today, and the first 5Ks are, like, really, really hard. So I'm really looking forward to it. But I think if the breakaway has a chance, it's tomorrow with the huge GC gaps today. But yeah, that's all from us. Make sure you check out Join Cycling through the link down below, and we can't wait to keep you company during this weekend where we got some more GC action over the next 2 days. Until then, ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.